That's 776-5368.
Yes, music to make me feel like I'm on the Love Boat, on a cruise. Oh, look, shrimp scampi. I should have some. Oh, Patrick Doyle, what are you doing on my cruise that I'm having in my mind right now?
I don't know, but I'm in the wrong place, man.
I'm in the Bahamas, baby. What are you? Did you pay full fare? What are you doing? Aren't you supposed to be on a lower deck?
If I'm in your mind, I'm on a lower deck.
Well, listen to this. Man. I mean, let's all just take a cruise for a moment, okay? Hold on. Here you go. The Love Boat. I don't know. It's just one of those things. You see the palm trees swaying and blue waters.
Yeah.
Okay, back to reality.
Well, do we have to?
Are we talking about addictions?
Can we?
What? Patrick Doyle is here, counselor par excellence. And I have no idea why you're here or what you're going to talk about.
I think we need to talk about your addiction to daydreaming.
Is that an addiction?
No, I'm just kidding.
I find it therapeutic.
It can be.
You know, I had a news story about that.
Depending on the content is.
It talked about the creativity from a work standpoint.
Yeah.
If people do daydream, and I realize anything can be abused, but what they found, I don't even know how you do a study on this, you know? Hey, aren't you supposed to be in a meeting? Well, I'm daydreaming. I'm much more productive right now. But however they decided this, they did a study, and they did find that people who kind of take those breaks end up being more productive rather right. than just kind of, I guess, being so singularly focused you can't see the big picture. So.
Right. I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah. But I don't know. Is that what you wanted to talk about
sure,
today?
Sure, whatever you want to do, Steve.
I'm just here for the ride, man.
Actually,
wait a minute. Wait. No. Here's where I am. No, there we go. I'm floating, baby. There you go.
Okay. Where are the cameras when we need them?
Oh, you don't want them.
I think we should do a show sometime with question and answer, and you ask the question, and then I play a song to answer it.
Oh, that would,
fun?
Yeah. What's up? Wouldn't be the song. Yeah, what's up with that?
I want to talk about depression.
Oh, well.
Can you turn that music back on?
I suppose I could. All right. Well, what kind of depression are you wanting to discuss? Well, there are different kinds, aren't there?
Yeah, well.
Are you talking about, look, it's sunny outside, the summer is here. You don't think of depression necessarily, but I realize,
yes.
You know, I do remember this. All these little factoids are coming back to my mind.
Yeah.
And it was that whereas we normally think of depression at Christmas time and when things get gloomy, they say, no, it's actually in April where they have more cases of depression. So it can happen anytime.
So What causes depression? This is one of the things. It's similar to the discussion that was just being had about addiction, which is the cause, right?
Mm.
Is it because there's something chemically wrong? Is it because it's hereditary? Is it because I am a terrible person? What's the reason?
You know, let me give you a story, and
Good.
I mentioned this before.
I like stories.
Have you ever You know, it's enlightening because life is a series of stories when you think about it.
Yes,
you know,
narrative.
I mean, it's
That's
your
right.
own story, and like they say, you're the star in your own narrative, so to speak. Because I mean, well, it's happening around you. It's not an ego thing. All
right.
Here you go. You're at a wonderful place
right.
with a group of people. Now, that group of people can be your friends, your family, whatever you want to say. It's happy people wanting to be at a place, and you're enjoying it, whatever it might be. And then you look over, and there's another group of people, and they're having a whole different experience. It's not a happy one.
No.
I noticed this when I was at Disneyland, and I saw a very dysfunctional.
The happiest place on earth?
It should be. I was having fun. The people I was with, it was like, yeah, we're here. This is it. You know?
Right.
And I looked over there, and I thought, oh, these are not happy people. It was a whole group. It was like clouds over the head, you know, kind of like a cartoon
right,
thing.
Right, right.
And I thought, here we have these little social structures, and we're running all over the place. And you can tell that if those little kids, let's say, in that other area were with my group, they would end up being happy. But they were in their own group and in the swirl of all
right.
the stuff going on there. And they weren't. So I think it can be environmental. I'm not blaming anything.
No, no.
I'm just saying
right.
that I think that can happen.
I think environmental factors are huge. And the environment that I think is most crucial to think about is the thought content of your own mind.
Oh, that is where it begins and ends, isn't it?
Yes, it's my contention. Now, I'm going to say a couple of things that I know will be controversial.
Okay.
So, but I do want to point to a resource where folks can get more information. So, I don't believe that depression is biological or hereditary.
Okay.
I don't believe that about addiction either.
Now, do some people say that? I don't know that I've heard about depression being – well, I guess I have in a way.
Yeah, it's hereditary. It's, you know, it's It's a disease. It's, you know, it's your mind is messed up. You have messed up brain chemistry. And I don't.
Oh, I see.
I don't subscribe to that. And if you want some really good research done by a Harvard psychiatrist that came up with a conclusion, he says that he doesn't believe that depression is biological at all. He says he doesn't believe schizophrenia is biological. And he's done the research as a psychiatrist to ferret this stuff out. His name is Peter Bregan.
Well, no, let me throw one thing out to you. Let me ask you. The first thing that comes to mind is this. You know, chemical imbalances have been attributed to a lot of things, but it has been shown that can be a problem that leads to a certain way, whether it's schizophrenia or whatever. So if you had a hereditary situation where you had a problem with that could help cause that, couldn't it? So wouldn't that be said to be hereditary?
Yeah, but here's the deal. When you really start dealing with research, and I've worked in psychiatric facilities and I've seen this be true, I've never met somebody who is dissociative, psychotic, schizophrenic, whatever, who wasn't severely wounded.
Oh.
And what Peter Bregan would say is that their soul's been shattered by the pain. And so it has different ways of expressing itself. Some people talk about one of the most popular things or the most prominent things I deal with recently is bipolar. Okay. Now, I want to announce to everyone, just so you know, I am not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist. I just got almost, 25 years of experience in doing this. And I've dealt with a lot of people, worked in a lot of situations. This is my opinion. Okay. Be very clear. My opinion. I can, support it if you'd like, but it's my opinion. Bipolar, for example, I've never met a bipolar person who wasn't severely wounded. So here's what happens. The person comes in, their symptoms are they're up and they're down and they're up and down. Maybe they're in touch with reality. Maybe they're not. And what we want to do is medicate them and call it good.
To control it.
To control it. Mm-hmm. But what about what's causing it? It's my contention that what's causing it is the severe pain they have in their soul. And it's also my contention that you cannot heal that kind of pain medically. Biologically, you can only heal it spiritually. You can have a biological component to help. And I do believe that medication is sometimes very beneficial to help somebody get through a crisis, but I don't believe it's ever the answer in these things. So if you're depressed, here's what happens. That, like you said, the sun is shining, or I'm at Disneyland, but I'm unhappy.
Yeah.
Well, that can't be because of your environment, right? What are you thinking? What do you think all day long about? What are the thoughts that come into your mind? I can tell you that I've never been laying awake at night, unable to sleep because of the good thoughts about myself.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Also, it reminds me of a situation where when you feel yourself going down that road, have you ever stopped yourself and said, okay, wait a minute, there's two ways I can go. I could continue down this road or I could now just stop and make a different turn and change the rest of the day.
Right.
And it does work.
Some people have that ability. But there's other people who have been really severely wounded who don't even recognize they have that option. Hmm. They don't even that road doesn't even – that turnoff never appears to them because they don't – their belief system is so skewed by the pain, they don't believe they're able to not be sad.
I think I met somebody like that, and I didn't know it when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you another story.
Okay.
I'm full of stories.
You
today.
Are.
I don't know why, but it just comes in. What you're saying, all of a sudden, light bulb goes, bing, there's this. We had a situation. It was a great thing. It was called January term, where in college, month of January, you would get out of the field that you were working in to do something different, kind of expand your horizons.
Right.
And normally, some of them were in class. Oh, they were boring. So some of them were like field trip type things.
Right.
So anyway, this one was called Music in San Francisco. So
awesome.
It was kind of cool. Yeah, I went to see the orchestra and
cool.
Saw a few plays and things, and it was wonderful. Well, again, the orb of people that you surround yourself with. I was with a good orb of people. Uh-huh. You know, we had a whole lot of fun.
Right.
And it just so happened that in this situation, we all drove our cars up there and all that, so it wasn't like a one bus thing. It was like a caravan. It was a road trip.
Right.
It could have been fraught with all sorts of problems, but it seemed to work out okay. So once you're there and you're hanging around, there's like 50, 60 of you. You know, you kind of swap around different cars. Okay, hey, you ride with us this time. We're going over here and all that. So the car that I was in, we were crammed full. 69 Chevelle, great vehicle, two-door.
I know why you were in it.
I wish I still had it. Yeah. Well, so there were like seven of us in there, which was probably totally illegal, but it was fun for going up and down Knob Hill, you know, or down. You go up, you're in trouble because it's only one way. So we had a group of people.
Did you catch air?
No, didn't, fortunately.
Okay.
So we were, I don't know, we were at one of the play things or something or other. And so afterwards we thought, you know, let's get something to eat. Well, there was this one girl. It was the ultimate whiner. It was almost like a Saturday Night Live routine, except this was before the Saturday Night Live routine. And we didn't, I don't think any of us realized that she's probably the exact person you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Because here's what would happen. I mean, when you're living in close proximity, you see all sorts of things. Because she was not an unattractive person or anything.
Right.
There's nothing that you could say that in some way she'd been... from an outward way, abused.
You couldn't tell. Right?
You could tell it was all inside. Mm-hmm. It had to be. Because they say in the morning, you know, she'd comb her hair. She had long black hair. But then she'd frizz it all up and start looking like Phyllis Diller, kind of. And it was like, why are you doing that? And I think it might have been that she didn't want to look that great because she didn't feel that great.
Right.
But here's my story. Uh-huh. All this to lead up to this. We're going to go get something to eat. All of us are in the car. We'll go to Jack in the Box.
Uh-huh.
It's a huge order. There's seven of us.
Right,
and so, you know, we're not sitting there at the window waiting. We're at the drive-thru.
Right.
We're just taking the sacks, putting it all in.
Right.
And she was always, oh, I don't know if I want to go here. And I don't. It's just like, hey, we're going. You're going to be with us. Well, I don't know. If I'm in the back, I might get car sick. You know, it's this kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
All of us get our food. She looks and goes, oh, they didn't have my taco. Of all the people, she was the one person that did. Oh, it's probably going to, you'll never get it back now. I said, we're gonna get it. I was driving.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no, that's okay. She kind of wanted to wallow in it. I said, no, I'm turning the car around. We're going back even as I'm speaking. Oh, no, that's okay. Well, there's nothing I found out. There's nothing you could make that person happy because I think she'd been so damaged inside.
Right. Right.
I don't – to expect to her to understand how she was affecting others,
right.
I think would have been asking a lot.
Right.
There's my story.
Okay, so
– I have no more stories.
Now, why would someone be that way? Well, no one wants to be depressed. I mean, I don't know. I mean, there might be some people. That's a whole nother show if you want to be depressed. But
I can't imagine she wanted to be because it was a chronic problem.
And I don't believe that she even knew that that's how she came across.
I'm wondering about that, too. Mm-hmm. You're probably right.
Right.
And if we had pointed it out, I don't know if she could have processed that. What's her reference point?
Exactly. You know? So here's the thing. If I feel worthless, no good, empty, defective, less than in my own mind, how am I going to behave?
Well, just the way as this girl did.
Or I'll be self-destructive in some fashion.
Yeah.
You ever met somebody that was sort of self-destructive and you just couldn't understand why?
Mm.
And you're like, that person's got so much going on for them. They're talented, they're smart, whatever, but they just keep shooting themselves in the foot. Why do they do that?
Mm.
Okay? That is an evidence of someone who has a message in their head that says, I don't matter. Now, the person that's doing it is probably not conscious of that message. Okay, but the reason that people get that message is because they're mistreated, they have injustice done to them, they're abandoned, they're neglected, something has happened to them. Every person comes into the world desiring to be the center of their parents' universe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes a kid has a parent that is incapable of loving them. If your parent is incapable of loving you and doesn't, a little kid, what do they think? Well, this is a sad and unfortunate situation in which I find myself.
Mm.
No. Little kids go, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
Why doesn't my dad love me?
You know, you see it even in the animal world.
Yes.
You know, where you get a stray cat who's been abused, and it may be a lifetime in trying to turn that
and they're neurotic.
Cat around. Yes, right. That's true.
So would
humans be different?
No. Yeah. So here's the deal. So is it wrong for someone to want to be loved? Well, of course not. Okay? But if you've been damaged, and whether you know it or not is a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
If I know I've been damaged, then I can start making some of the links. But when I grew up in my family that was a crazy, abusive family, I didn't have much to compare it to.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't. I'm like, okay, I guess it's kind of how it is, you know? And then it wasn't until I got a little bit older that I realized, oh, gosh, my friends' families aren't like this. This is kind of weird.
Mm.
Oh, you know, uh-oh. So as I started to develop intellectually, I could start figuring stuff out. But who do you think I blamed?
Well, yourself, I suppose.
Yes,
huh? You
me.
Must have done something.
Uh-huh. Mm. I have no other options. So if I believe I'm at fault, I'm the one who's wrong, I am bad, I am defective, I am worthless, I am no good, I can always tell when someone has this belief system by what they do. They can say all the right things, but if you are consistently self-destructive, addiction, you know, it may be one of those things, you continually are in relationships that end up harmful to you, there's lots of ways you keep failing in jobs, even though you're qualified to keep them, you know, you can't progress in your life. These things are, to me, evidence that you have this message. Okay, if you have that message, no pill can fix it. And look, I took a bunch of pills early on in my life trying to fix this problem. It didn't work. It doesn't work because the issue here is the gospel. You have to come to grips with what God has said about his value for you. He has to etch that into your soul. If that isn't etched into your soul, then you're never going to be able to overcome it. It's beyond you. It's bigger than you. The pain is too much. And this is where I get into conflict with a lot of the therapies, is they're gospel-less. There's no power greater than God. And he's the one who has the power to write a different DNA into your heart. Your experiences on earth are all you got unless God gets involved and does something different. Now, here's what somebody who has that message would say. Well, I can understand why it's not happening for me because, you know, after all, I can see why God wouldn't love me. Mm. mm-hmm. I mean, look at me. Okay. What I'm telling you is that is a lie. God, if he can love me, if he can love you, he can love anybody. Right? Because it's not about me. It's not about what I do. It's about what he did. The whole onus is not on me. It's on him. The onus is not on me for perfect behavior. The onus is on him to bring about conviction so that I can live differently. You turn me over to myself, and I can guarantee you some stuff that really isn't nice is going to happen. Mm. It's true for every single one of us. You know, I hear it all the time in music and in movies and stuff. The people say, oh, follow your heart. I'm like, no, don't do that. Mm. You're going to end up in a really bad place. Jeremiah says the heart is exceedingly wicked and deceitful above all things. Who can understand it? I'm like, whoa. So the heart, my heart is exceedingly wicked and deceitful above all things? I better not follow that.
Yeah. You know, I was just.
I wouldn't recommend it.
It reminded me, yesterday I was reading, and I wish I could remember what the whole context was, but it had to do with two forms of thought, and it goes way back to the Renaissance period, where this type of, I don't know what you'd call it, mindset, I guess, was such that humanity is basically good, that goes along with that, and that because of that, then follow your heart because that's the first initiative,
yes.
And how could it be wrong?
Right.
It almost, you know, the Debbie Boone song, in a way, You Light Up My Life, how can it be wrong when it feels so good? And it's like, didn't she feel a little uncomfortable even singing those words?
Yeah.
I mean, at some point it's like, well, there are a lot of things that you have done in your whole life that you may have thought was good and it felt that way, but you found out it was wrong. So,
right. So here's the deal.
Seems so dysfunctional.
So for those of you who are out there listening who look at your life and you think, man, what is the deal? I mean, God doesn't love me, or he's upset with me, or these people just won't stop hurting me. It must be my fault, okay? If someone is hurting you purposely, it is not, and I repeat, it is not your fault, okay? If I walked home every day and just slapped my wife in the face every day, and then one day she hauled off and kicked me back, you know, would she be justified? No. Would I be justified in harming her every day? No. For those of you listening, I want you to remember this message. No one, I mean no one, has the right to mistreat you. No one. Not your mom, not your dad, not your boss, not your boyfriend, not your girlfriend, not your kids, not your friends, not your cousins. Nobody has the right to mistreat you. No one. That's scriptural. Okay? A lot of times in Christianity, we think, well, I'm a Christian, so I should let them walk over me. That's never what Jesus said. And if you look at some of the examples in Scripture of how he dealt with people, he did not let people walk on him. Mm-hmm. In the end, he took the punishment without saying anything because it was what he had to do. But when you see him in relationships, you know, when the Pharisees were trying to railroad him, he flat out went after him. Mm-hmm. He didn't let him just run over him. So no one has the right to mistreat you. If you believe you're worthless, you will believe they have that right. So how do you remedy the idea that you don't have any value? You remedy that with a spiritual life. Now, here's another thing that gets complicated because, look, I can't say to you, here's the 3-step plan to overcome this and then do this and I'll be fine. That doesn't exist, okay? It doesn't exist in this world. Here's the deal. Who is God? That's the first question you got to answer. If you've been hurt or abused, I'm guaranteeing you the thought you have about who he is a little bit skewed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I encourage you to pick up a copy of The Message. Read it. Don't try to figure it out. Don't try to find some spiritual, you know, intensity. Don't try to figure out your moral failures. Look for him. Who, God, I want to know who you are. God gave us the scripture as a revelation of himself, not as a manual for living. It's a revelation of who he is. If you see him, I guarantee something. If you see him, you will be changed. If you see God, you will change. I'm sitting here as a result of God being merciful and showing me himself repeatedly. I wasn't even asking sometimes. So the core of this transition is not intellectual. It's not more information. And like I've said before, if information solved problems, we would be living in euphoria, mm-hmm. utopia yeah. right now. We have more information than ever before in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And things aren't getting better. So it's not information that's important. It's revelation. God revealing himself to you, not to me. Because if God reveals himself to me, it does you no good. It only does you good when he does it for you. So, but if you're struggling with the idea that I'm bad, I'm disqualified, he, not me, it couldn't be me, all that other stuff, those are lies. Look, read the scriptures. David, Peter, Paul, I mean, there's all these cats in there who were completely nutty, who didn't deserve what they got. But God is merciful and gracious. It's the only way any of us breathe is because he's merciful. And he has made it right for you. And this is the thing. If you start there, then we can get to all those other behavioral problems. But without that foundation, you'll never have the strength to take the risk to deal with it. You'll just keep covering it up. So I would also encourage you to find somebody you can confess to. This is another big portion of it. David says in Psalm 32, when I held it in, my bones turned to dust. But when I let it out, I was free. I'm paraphrasing.
Yep.
But the truth of it is that's the case. If you're sitting on a ton of secrets, you're not going to be okay. It's just not going to – you're not going to be okay. You're going to be paranoid, lonely, overwhelmed, depressed, angry, whatever. You've got to find a safe place to get that out. The first and foremost safe place is God himself. Confess to him. But then you need to find a brother or sister who has proven, and I underscore, embolden, and underline, proven that they are safe with their behavior. Because you confess to somebody who's not safe, and they will gossip, judge, backstab, whatever you, and that's not going to help.
Yeah.
You've got to make sure the person is safe. You got to confess. And in that process, I believe God will begin the process of revelation of who he is and how he loves you. And that risk is an absolute requirement in this process. And this is where we get stuck in changing, is that we don't want to take a risk.
Well, you know, I'm thinking that some of those people who are damaged that way may not have close relationships, so it's hard for them to reach out to somebody. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a good suggestion to all of us to look around. For us to look around to see who's hurting, and maybe we're the one who can come alongside them.
That is so good, Steve. I'm so glad you said that, because that is really the job of the church.
Yeah.
If we are safe, we need to be looking for those who are in need.
Yeah.
So we can be that safe person. Dude, if the church became a safe place as a rule, evangelism would explode. Because as Perry has said repeatedly, you know, there's this stats about how many people in church are hurting and are alone. Yeah. It's just absolutely unconscionable that that's happening.
It's kind of like the trend of hit-and-run Christianity, you know? Make your appearance and then disappear. You know, I showed up.
That's not Christianity, by the way, but okay.
Well, I'm thinking, yeah, however you want to look at it.
Because Jesus didn't hit and run. He was with those cats 12 for years.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I'm talking about the Sunday appearance, you know, that kind of thing.
I know exactly what you're talking about. But that should not be how it is. We should be – I'll tell you a story. I was at church a while back, and this 17-year-old kid came up to me, and he's asking me some questions about the church. And he says, so, you know, I was doing a report on the church, and he said, you know, what I've discovered from that was the church is supposed to be like a family.
Okay.
And I was like, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. He says, but, you know, I've never felt like I was part of a family at church.
Really? So this was like a study result rather than...
He did this report for school at Cascade. Yeah. Hmm. And I was like, well, that's a very astute observation. How many people are sitting in church who do not feel like they're part of a family?
Right, yeah.
And I'm saying those of us who have the blessing of some security in that, we need to be trying to transmit that to them, mm-hmm. welcoming them in. I think being a Christian is much more proactive than it is passive. I think we need to quit waiting for the ambulance to show up, and we need to go, you know, get there before the ambulance needs to show up. And but that can't happen if you think you're worthless.
Yeah.
If you're feeling that way, you're never going to reach out to somebody else in a healthy way.
Right. Yeah.
So it's imperative that we start with who God is. We discover who that is, and then we confess. We get out of our secrets. I'm telling you, this is one of the keys to freedom. And you might think, there's no way, man, if I confess, my life will be over. I would encourage you to go to a website called IamSecond.com.
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
Isn't that awesome?
Fascinating.
Yeah, and I would encourage you to listen to some of those testimonies, particularly a guy named Nate Larkin. Larkin.
Okay.
On IamSecond.com. And he talks pretty honestly about his journey. And how he thought that exposing himself would be the end, but really it was the beginning. Hmm. And his life's been radically transformed by his exposure, exposing his sin, which was not pretty, by the way. It wasn't like, you know, I stole a piece of bubble gum. It was pretty horrible what he was doing. And yet God has used that guy to free many, many other people because of his transparency. If you're a believer, you need to start being transparent, because in that you will see God. The hiding... It's a death trap. It's a place where depression starts. Depression gets its fuel from the secrets. And so one of the ways to deal with that is to get them out, and it starts to lose its power.
Hmm. All right.
Okay.
Patrick Doyle, thank you very much.
You bet.
And how can people get in touch with
you? They can call my office at 622-6018, or they can check us out on the web at veritascounseling.com.
Okay. And give that number again.
622-6018.
All right. If you need that information, just call us here at the studios. Patrick, thanks.